Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Sutter, and my co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. You'll follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page, and RA at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support over there is very much appreciated, as always. And Brendan, we're going to talk about this more all throughout the week here on the show, and really throughout the next few weeks, because we're doing a special throughout the podcast network here for the NBA channels, going back on some fun seasons. And we actually put in the voters' hands here, our listeners, Brendan, about what years we're going to cover for the Suns, what people want to reminisce on during this time. And the first one on the list here, 1992-93, arguably the best season in Suns history. They won 62 games. Charles Barkley wins his MVP in his first year in Phoenix, ultimately losing the finals to the Bulls, Brendan, but a very fun season for the Suns, and I'm glad we're going to go down memory lane about.
Definitely. Thanks to everybody who voted. I felt a little bad. I put the poll up, and it felt a little mean to make people pick between 92-93 and 04-05, which I think most of the time we would say are the two best, but I didn't want to do 04-05 and 05-06, and I felt like if I did the poll a different way, we might end up just doing two back-to-back seasons, not a whole lot of different stuff to talk about there. So these are the two we picked. I'm sure if it goes well, if you guys like it, as always, send in your feedback, send in any questions. We might bring on some guests who were more around for this period of time than we were, considering how young we are. And maybe we can answer some of those questions or just anything you guys want to bring up, especially those of you who are around to really experience this season. But it should be fun. I agree. A season that I've always wish that I could have been a part of as a Suns fan. Like, it's the one that my parents and my grandparents' generations always talk about, the one that I really think officially sort of made Phoenix a basketball town. I know that it's pretty much a Cardinals town at this point, but the way that I look at this one is it really put the Suns on the map with a big superstar player like Charles Barkley and a trip to the finals. It had been 15 or so years since they were in the finals, and that was back when really not a lot of people cared about the NBA. This was really during the peak of the league, and for Phoenix to be front and center the way that they were was pretty cool. I did want to shout out before we jump in here, Espo, Greg Esposito, who has been a guest on our show, obviously does the Sun Solar Panel podcast, did an awesome write-up of the Charles Barkley trade over at Sports 360 AZ 3 years ago about. So people should go check that out. That's what we are going to talk about first here is Charles Barkley getting traded to the Suns right before this season starts in June of 1992. The thing that jumped out to me, and you can tell me if you knew this, Evan, two surprises from this deal. One is that according to Espo's story, I think it was Barkley himself who said that he found out about the trade 5 hours after hearing that he had been acquitted of two misdemeanor charges for getting in a fist fight with a man in Milwaukee in 1991. Did you know that? I didn't even know that Charles went through that period, let alone prior that quickly before getting traded to Phoenix.
Yeah, that is a crazy sequence, Brandon. What a day that would be, going from that and just a few hours later you get a call, hey, you're getting traded from Philadelphia all the way to Phoenix.
Yeah. And then the other one is actually from Bob Young, who I think might be a good guest to bring on if we can get him, who obviously still writes about the Suns over at The Athletic, said that he had heard back then covering the team that there were some rumors about the Suns potentially trading for Hakeem Olajuwon, which is not anything that I had ever heard either. I don't know how close that actually came, but imagine how different history would go if prior to the Rockets winning their two championships in 94 and 95, if Hakeem had been traded to Phoenix. That is a big what if.
Yeah, really, truly is, because we all know Hakeem Olajuwon really would have been the first transcendent Suns big man outside of Alvin Adams, and you go get a beast like that in the middle. And I think it worked out in the end for the Suns, though, because the first 8 years of Charles Barkley's career, Brendan, in Philadelphia, averaged 23 points, 12 rebounds, 2 steals, and a block per game, while shooting almost 58% from the field. His first year in Phoenix, right away, like you mentioned, Brent, Cotton Fitzsimmons actually drove him from the airport straight to the facility to get work in, because it was right before the season started and the Suns wanted to get going with Barkley and get him adjusted into the system. First year at the Suns in their offense, 25.6 points, 12.2 rebounds, 5.1 assists, which was a career high at the time for Barkley, 1.6 steals and 1 block while shooting 52% from the field. just an incredible season efficiency wise. And when you look throughout the box for their Brandon, because Barkley truly was that missing piece for that Suns team.
Yeah, I think it is interesting to think what would have happened if Hakeem had come, because I think he was able to sustain his peak a little bit longer than Barkley. So you wonder if maybe that gives the Suns their championship window lasts just a little bit longer. But like you said, I mean, you, for this one season, I think Charles Barkley was better than Hakeem, and obviously by winning the MVP, one of the best players in the NBA. I know this is an MVP that a lot of people think maybe should have gone to Michael Jordan, but when you put the numbers out there, like you said, 25 or basically 26, 12 and 5, the assist, I think, is always a thing that people underestimate. But when you go back and look at this guy's box score, he was a really dominant playmaker, just so smooth in the post where he knew how to draw attention and kick it to the right player. And not a lot of big men that were producing at least assists at the level that he was. I would say too, with Barkley, we haven't actually gone over what the trade was. They traded Tim Perry, Jeff Hornacek, and Andrew Lang. And Tim Perry and Andrew Lang, I think, are mostly forgotten. Maybe hardcore Suns fans remember them just because they were the guys who were traded for Barkley. The big deal was Hornacek, and a fan favorite, somebody who obviously ultimately would come to become the head coach of the Suns just a few years ago under Ryan McDonough, and somebody that I think was beloved in this franchise. But when you, it's one of those superstar trades where you go back and look, and it's just obvious that this guy was clearly worth whatever version of that trade was going to happen. No picks, and only one player who really stood the test of time. That is a no-brainer deal and pretty incredible in hindsight.
Yeah, pretty much a heist that the Suns pulled off there. And you look back on it, you get an MVP right off the bat, and you have a sustained success for 3 to 4 years there at Barkley at the helm, leading the Suns team. And sustained success is what the Suns team hopes to get back to here soon with Devin Booker. But when you talk about the MVP and it being controversial, Michael Jordan here, I think one thing that maybe people overlook nationally as far as that goes is the Suns were dominant that year. They were 62-20. They were first in the Western Conference. They were really blowing out teams. Their offense was easily the best in the league, offensive rating of 113.3. And they also had a top 10 defense. So when you add that all together, I think Barkley, in the first year of a team with Phoenix, I think he definitely deserved the MVP award over Jordan in that sense. But anything else on Barkley here, Brent, before you want to dive into more of how the Suns season went for them?
Yeah, let's get into the season, because I think that is obviously inextricable from Barkley. So let's talk about the impact he actually had on this group.
Before we do, I want to remind you guys, if you're not already, to subscribe to Locked On Suns. Still going daily for you guys throughout this time with no sports, no NBA. Hopefully that's back here soon. But in the meantime, you're doing a lot of fun storylines like this one and have a lot of fun guests on throughout this time. So make sure to subscribe on Google Play, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to us. We are on every single stream platform. Just search Locked On Suns. We'll be right there for you guys. We'll be back in just a second.
Hey guys, if you're like me, dealing with this coronavirus situation, you've been reading everything there is to read, trying to stay educated, trying to do whatever you can to lend a helping hand to those who need it. But the reality is, this is an opportunity to try to make yourself better as well. I think we can all come out of this improved, smarter, more thoughtful, more careful, a whole lot of things. But let me tell you about the most useful app for learning new things and getting ahead. It's a hard time to find to just sit down and read, right? I mean, like I said, I'm reading the news, I'm reading a whole bunch of stuff, but not necessarily the most important things, to be honest with you. This incredible app, Blinkist, solves that problem, and I highly recommend it. Blinkist is really unique. It works on your phone or your tablet or even just your web browser to take the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and then it condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can either read or listen to. Successful people like business leaders, entrepreneurs, whatever it is, are well known for reading a lot of books. I think it makes you smarter, right? Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. With its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people right now are using Blinkist and its massive growing library. From self-help, business, and health to history books, Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists, as well as some of the classic nonfiction titles that you maybe always meant to read, but never had time to. Like I said, I like Blinkist because it gives me an excuse to maybe learn some new things, expand my horizons a little bit, maybe get away from sports and news and find some new stuff out. It's quick. You could do it while you're walking the dog. You could do it while you're getting some chores done, while you're, we are all still maybe in the car here and there, but maybe not just as long as it used to be. So this is perfect. Just 15 minutes condensed. There's books like Becoming by Michelle Obama, the Tiger Woods biography by Jeff Benedict, and my personal favorite, a gift that I got my stepdad last year, The Sports Gene, Inside the Science of Extraordinary Athletic Performance. It gets into the heads of these incredible athletes, these elite athletes, what allows them to break through the way that they do. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our Locked On Suns audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA and try it free for 7 days, as well as 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your 7-day free trial. And you'll also save 25% off of your new subscription, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA.
All right, Brian, let's dive in now to the Suns season. Like I mentioned, in 1993, they were 62-20, a number one in offensive rating, number nine defensive rating, a starting lineup that looks pretty intimidating now back, they're looking at in 2020 with Kevin Johnson, Dan Majerle, Cedric Ceballos, Charles Barkley, and Mark West. That's a very strong starting five there.
Definitely. I mean, we talked about the trade and the fact that only one of those players in Hornacek really stood the test of time as far as being a player that anyone has much of a memory of 30 or so years later. All of those guys, you know, obviously being somebody who we cover this team, so those names might ring a little bit more clear to us than others. But I mean, that's five dominant starting players, if not all stars. And then you talk about who they had off the bench in Danny Ainge toward the end of his career, coming off of some awesome seasons with the Celtics with their championship runs, but still serviceable, 27 minutes a game for him, starting a relationship with this franchise that would last through all the way till basically the next season we're about to talk about next week, 05-06. That range, Ainge would go on to become pretty involved. Tom Chambers as well, a guy who we all remember because he is on the broadcasts here, but strong, very strong bench player for this group. And it's kind of crazy that you look, this was sort of the peak of all of these players that we remember from this era coming together. And I guess not all individually at the peak of their powers, but a group that jived at the right time. And it's just, I mean, I think that's the thing that the reason that we started with Barkley, and obviously that's the player we all remember so much, is because it's just rare to see. I mean, even just in the past couple of seasons, we saw Kawhi Leonard get off to a rocky start with the Clippers, at least in the locker room. They seem to have some issues. LeBron James misses the playoffs his first season with the Lakers. It's just not common that you see these guys jump into a team, fit so well, and then just take them to the very top right away. It's really pretty incredible, even though it was such a long time ago, that they were able to pull it off and then just get into top gear right away. It almost reminds me of the Allen, Pierce, Garnett Celtics, that they won that title their first year. And it's just maybe once in a generation that comes together that way. I know the Suns did not win the title, but to get that close in year one is pretty awesome.
I think this is kind of a fun question to ask here, Brendan, when you look back on it, because the Suns team was really ahead of its time as far as offense goes, pushing the pace with a small ball lineup, really what 2020 NBA basketball is all about here. You had Danny Ainge come off the bench as a sixth man. Mark West, the starting center, was only 6'10", 230. He's playing only 19 minutes per game, though, in 1993. Danny Ainge definitely trumped him in minutes. Tom Chambers as well, coming off the bench at 24 minutes per game. Just a high-paced group there. And when you look back on it, I think it's fair to say that the Suns, at least in 1992-93, we always talk about the seven seconds or less Suns as far as revolutionizing basketball. But I think 1992-93 might have opened the door a little bit there.
Definitely a tip of the hat to Ryan Russillo and Bill Simmons. They went on a big run when they recapped the Seattle-Phoenix playoff series a couple weeks back after the season got shut down, identifying how ahead of his time specifically. I mean, Barkley was surely. I mean, there's a reason we are still comparing new modern players like Zion and Blake Griffin to Charles, but Dan Marley taking 5.3 triples per night and Danny Ainge taking 4.7. Those are not numbers that you would see. You maybe have one player who was doing that on a team, and even then really not a core part of many teams' offense. And to have two players playing 30 or so minutes a night taking threes that way is, you can't really come up ahead of his time is probably the best term for it. And then Charles Barkley almost taking three threes a night himself. The Suns were second in the NBA in three-point attempt rate. It's a kind of a joke, the number that they were at, which is just 15% of their total field goals. The, you know, league leader, you'll see some teams take over half their shots from three these days, the Rockets and the Bucks and teams, the Nets, teams like that. But they were certainly pushing the boundaries of what offense was going to become in the NBA.
First year head coach as well, Brennan, with Paul Westphal leading the charge for the Suns. And he lucked into a very good team, but also I think he did an awesome job coaching, like we mentioned, kind of revolutionizing a little bit, going small ball a lot more often. And we've seen in the past with Steve Kerr, the Warriors, David Blatt, Tyronn Lue, the Cavaliers, when you have LeBron James. It's not often, though, first year head coaches have this amount of success right away.
No, and you look, they were fifth in offensive rating the year before, according to Basketball Reference. They had a little bit of a healthier season. The one thing we should mention here, too, Kevin Johnson goes down for not the majority, but a fair 33 games of the season with strained hamstring and groin problems, comes back late in the year and is around for the playoffs. But they had a healthier version of Kevin Johnson the year prior, fifth in offense. I tend to think that going from good to great in whether it's one category or just in the NBA, which this team did both, they went from a good offense to a great offense, and then they went from a good team with 53 wins to a great team with 62 and a finals berth. I think that is one of the hardest things to do. And yeah, I mean, you can say like they were on their way there already. And sure, you know, most of the rotation aside from Ainge and Barkley remained from one season to the next. And they were a little bit of a modern looking team prior to Barkley. It's always going to be a confluence of events, but I think Westphal does deserve a lot of credit. It's not common, like you said, to see a young coach do so well. Ty Lue's a good, I think that's a good comp. You know, he was able to, that good to great jump, I think, really came under him for those Cleveland teams. The other thing, a couple quick notes, Cedric Ceballos, a guy who I remember, a lot of younger Suns fans will remember as like the in-arena host early in the, maybe, I don't know, 2005, 6, 7 range. In the arena at Talking Stick Resort, broke out this year. Third season in the league, went up to 13 points per game, 58% shooting. And then Richard Dumas, who is a sort of a forgotten player in league history, Suns history, this was basically his one good season. He missed his rookie year entirely with a drug suspension, scored 16 a game in 92-93 on 52% shooting. And then 3 years later, after another missed season entirely from another drug suspension, is basically gone, was never able to finish his career because he just got into so much trouble off the floor. This was also the first season at Talking Stick Resort Arena. That really puts into perspective when we talk about the renovations, how direly needed they are, that we're talking about a season almost 30 years ago when they moved into this building.
Yeah, it really does go to show you just what an impact having like a splash like Charles Barkley, and you have this kind of successful team gel together at the perfect time, really go on this magical run and really putting the Suns basketball on the map as far as really being a national force and going on to have sustained success moving forward here for the next 20 plus years until this recent decade or so. But anything else you want to hit on, Brennan, before we dive into the finals match here with the Bulls, which is certainly legendary?
No, yeah, let's go through the whole playoff run as quickly as we can. We will definitely dive in more specifically to some of these moments as we go through the week here. But before that, just a quick reminder, we are all spending more time at home lately as we try to beat this pandemic that is really affecting all of us. But one way to kind of make that time go by a little smoother, catch up on some fun Suns news, maybe provide a little bit of a distraction is to play us, play our show on your smart speaker, whether it's Google or Amazon. Just say the command word and then say play podcast Locked On Phoenix Suns. It will cue the latest episode of our show up, play it through your speaker, and provide you a little company as we are all apart right now. I think it's a fun way. Sports has really been, even though it's a lot of old games and fun little exercises like this, it has all kept us all sane, I think. So one more time, say the command word to your smart speaker and then play podcast Locked On Phoenix Suns. We'll be right back. What struck me about the 92-93 Suns playoff run, really looking at the whole of it, was they played a lot of long series. This was when the first round was only five games. Five-game series against the Lakers, six games against the Spurs, which shows the rivalry dating back even to before all of us really remember it rounding into shape. Seven-game series against the Supersonics, which a lot of those games have been talked about lately. And then the infamous six-game series against the Bulls, which was Chuck and Michael, you know, obviously close friends, duking it out and really going toe-to-toe. Barkley showing that he belonged in that conversation right after the Dream Team stuff and in 92. And just a cool trek back through history, really. Just these, so many of these 1990s playoff series were just superstar versus superstar all the way through. And obviously Chuck versus Michael is about as good as it gets in the 90s for a finals matchup.
Oh, absolutely. And going back on that six-game final series, it just goes to show you how impressive not only Barkley and the Suns were keeping that close, but how dominant Jordan was. 41-9-6. That's just incredible stuff he was putting up there. Barkley was 27-13-6. So definitely two superstars, two MVP candidates going head-to-head there. But when you look as well, just over that long stretch, Brendan, five games, six games, seven games, six games, like you mentioned there, all long, hard-fought. They really fought through some perseverance there as far as fatigue and having to go through all these tough matches, because this is kind of peak when all these Hall of Fame legendary superstars were at their peak of their play. And it just goes to show you how impressive that was to go through that gamut.
For sure. I was hoping just for the lore of it that Michael or that Magic Johnson was still on the Lakers at this point, but he had already retired. But yeah, you had David Robinson in the Spurs. Then you have Gary Payton and Sean Kemp in the Seattle team that was really rounding into shape, would go on to face Jordan's Bulls themselves in a playoff series or in a final series later on. And then, yeah, I mean, this is one of Michael's best years. This was before his retirement. This was the third straight, as obviously everybody knows, but still three straight. And then you also factor in when we talk about both sides, fighting through just exhaustion, I guess. This was after the Dream Team, as I mentioned a minute ago. But so for Michael, you go win a championship in 91, win a championship in 92, Olympics in 92 with so much pressure and hype riding on that team. And then you go and you beat in a really close six-game series, a close friend of yours in the finals. None of these games, as far as I'm looking, were decided by more than 10 points. 10 points was the biggest margin of victory in this final series. I think we'll definitely have to look deeper into it as we go through this week. But is this a series that like, as a person who maybe didn't grow up hearing stories about the Suns, that stuck out to you? Because I have it in my head as something that, like, everybody, it's really one of the bigger, most classic final series in NBA history, but am I just kind of overhyping it because I've lived here?
No, absolutely. I think outside of like post 7 seconds or less era, which is kind of the era that we grew up in, Brennan, I think you think outside of that, the biggest Suns memory is definitely Charles Barkley and this Suns team going into Michael Jordan and the amount of attention that brought to everyone on the TV screens and how big of a matchup that was, MVP versus the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan. It certainly lives to the hype for sure. And that series just goes to tell you, just like we're going to say all throughout the week here, just how special of a run this was for this team.
Certainly. I think I just want to mention too, I was eating in the media room, which feels again like a lifetime ago prior to the stoppage in play with the NBA. And I couldn't even tell you who it was, but obviously when teams come through, visiting teams, they have former players that are either working for the team, broadcasting for the team, or even sometimes scouts for other teams who are in the building to watch the game, who used to play. And obviously Eddie Johnson, being the gregarious type that he is, tends to know a lot of these guys. And somebody was busting his chops about this season. Not that Eddie was on the team at that point, but having known Charles and being around Phoenix for so long, they were asking him if the rumors had been true that Chuck and Michael basically would just wear themselves to the bones playing rounds and rounds of golf between games, especially the games that were in Phoenix, which would have been game 1, 2, and 6, because this was when it was still 2-3-2 in the finals. And he said without a doubt, these guys would go, you know, maybe it was after shoot around, but before call time for before the game, they'd just play like 36 holes of golf in the June Phoenix sun. And I couldn't get over that. I was like, I guess that I had heard that. Like, we've all heard about the flu game. We've all heard Michael used to go to Vegas when they played the Jazz, or he'd go to Atlantic City when they would be up in the Northeast. And he's obviously known to be a gambler and a competitor and a whatever, but that just, I mean, we all know it's even hot right now. Like, I don't even want to leave the house right now. And these guys were out playing golf and then putting up 40 and 15 in the freaking finals. That just floored me when I heard that.
That just tells you how insane a competitors they were, and just the adrenaline they get off just any sort of competition. And definitely Barkley and Jordan had their share of on the court incidents together as far as this final series goes. But I think the golf stuff's pretty fun to reminisce about. But I know we have tons of time, Brian, over the next week or so to talk through this 92-93 Sun season, which is going to go down definitely in the top three, I'd say, for the most memorable Sun seasons in franchise history. But anything else you want to talk about here before we go on to part two of this, going into more of this discussion on Tuesday?
No, I think that covers us. It's definitely a fun one. Like I said, I would just remind everybody to send in any thoughts, memories. I'd love to hear people who were around for this one. Send us in. You can do it in the form of a review if you want to, if you're feeling extra nice. But yeah, Twitter, comment section on Bright Side of the Sun, if that's how you're finding us. Email us, whatever it is. I'd love to hear from people who were there, who really remember this fondly, about what was going through your head, how awesome it was to be in the Valley at that time, and just really see the Suns take on a national scope. But yeah, no, I'm excited to watch some of these games and hopefully bring on some guests, see what we can do here, and dive through what was still the most fondly remembered season, I think, in this team's history.
Yeah, this is going to be a very fun week here on Locked on Suns. Appreciate everyone listening on today's episode. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow to dive even deeper into the 92-93 Phoenix Suns season.